Hi everyone, and welcome to Keyframe, the Geek Show's dedicated animation podcast, and it is our Christmas episode, and also our final episode of 2017. My name is Rob, and joining me today are the usual, Tucky.
Hello.
And Mark.
Hello.
I love being called the usual. So you're walking to a bar, I'm the usual. Pint of me.
Okay. So the usual will not be there, and it will just confuse everyone.
That was just disturbing, Tucky.
Or we're going to drink Tucky.
No, we are not. And you can't make me.
Chin chin.
Get them S cells out.
Anyway. We've got a lot that we want to talk about today, but I think the first thing that we have to talk about, the very first thing, is Disney buying Fox. Now, we did mention this before as a possible thing. I think we mentioned it on 4Panel as a possible thing that was being talked about, but it's since been confirmed. I mean, they've got like 18 months to get it through regulators and stuff like that, but if Disney buy Fox, that's a whole new ballgame, because number one, they'll have the rights to the original Star Wars movie, which is hilarious, the fact that they didn't have, like, the screening rights to the original Star Wars movie. Right. Number two, all of the Marvel heroes be under one roof, so that means the mutants can join the MCU.
Yay!
And number three, we just got a whole load more Disney princesses. Yeah. And Deadpool, I want to reiterate this, Deadpool is not a Disney princess. Okay, even Lady Deadpool is not a Disney princess.
The rules of Disney princesses are you must be born from royalty, or, in the case of Mulan, for some reason, she won it through military conquest.
Hang on, so is that actually a rule? You have to do it through military conquest?
Yes, somebody actually said that to me, because I was like, oh, prepare for all these new Fox-related Disney princess things. To which, like, one of the avid Disney princess fans on my time, I was like, no, you can only be a Disney princess if you're from royalty or if you're given the honour by military.
Okay, like, so does that mean...
Like Mulan, because so, Mulan's, like, the exception.
Yeah, so does that mean Anastasia can now be a Disney princess?
Anastasia is a Disney princess, technically. Well, remember, these are ifs.
No,
there's a lot of Disney aficionados out there who will get really upset if we say they are now Disney princesses.
I think Anastasia should be a Disney princess because Anastasia was born from royalty.
That's made to the quarter.
Yes.
That's in the job description.
Exactly. So I don't see why Anastasia shouldn't be a Disney princess. Are there any others?
The alien xenomorphs. All born from the alien queen.
Oh. No, because they're all male. That's the way it works.
Does she not birth females?
Well, she does, but I don't think you ever get to see them. Because if they go by the typical insect methodology, then the females would be kind of dormant workers who can then, if the queen dies, then be turned into the next queen. But they're still potentially
a princess.
Yeah, but I don't think you actually see them in the alien movies, and I don't know if they would fit what we know as the xenomorph.
Well, it's in a meme. So
it's a meme, it counts.
It's a meme, but that's a technicality. Also, technically, the White Witch from Narnia.
Well, no, because the White Witch wasn't a queen, was she?
Well, she was Queen of Narnia for a period of time.
Well, not really. Well, actually, yeah, because she... Well, I don't know. That was
saying that
one.
Thing, like, he was queen. She took queen by conquest, which means that she was technically not a princess at the time.
Yeah, but that's where it gets a little bit iffy, because she wasn't given the honour of being queen by Aslan.
She took it for herself.
Yeah, whereas if we go by the typical Disney princess thing, as in Mulan, she was given the honour. Because the emperor that basically said, okay, you're fine. You know, and then everything was hunky-dory, wasn't it?
Well, any of the princesses from the Narnia series?
The princesses from the Narnia series, you know, not the White Witch, but the other ones, yeah, they're fine, you know.
There was also Neytiri from Avatar. Not the good Avatar, the bad blue one.
Which one from Avatar?
Neytiri.
Oh, Neytiri from Avatar. Yeah, she's a Disney princess.
I can't remember any other movie at all.
Yeah.
To be honest, it happened. It was a huge hit. I watched like about half an hour, fell asleep, and forgot. You know, like people could say, like at a pub quiz, who was the main star, and I'd say, well, I don't know, some bloke in a wheelchair.
Avatar deeply disturbs me, and I am very, very worried about the director, because the braid of hair that they have is their junk, and they use their junk to basically mate with each other. But they also use their junk to link with animals, so that is very disturbing to me, James Cameron.
So they're linking with animals.
That's now. Now we're in Japan. There's they found that some snow monkeys are having sex with a deer. Weird times. I'm sure it's a sign of the apocalypse at some point. You know, monkeys will sleep with deer. All that.
It's the end but times.
Speaking of bestiality, Cornelia from Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
Yeah. And by extension, this is another technically like difficult one. Would the Statue of Liberty from Planet of the Apes be classified as a Disney princess?
No, because she was never classed as a princess or a queen or any sort of royalty, and nor did she have any kind of right of conquest.
She's managed to get into New York as a foreigner and haven't deported her yet, so technically conquest.
Well, yeah, I love her there.
She's French, so what do you expect?
And my favourite, Meg Griffin from Family Guy.
Yes, yes, she is a Disney princess. I will actually defend that one.
Because Peter was the like ruler of Petoria.
Which was an independent state.
Yeah, so ergo, Meg is a princess, ergo, Ben Affleck. That's a Family Guy joke. People who've watched the show too much will understand what I mean.
Yeah.
I pointed out that Princess Kashmir from The Simpsons is technically a princess as well.
Also a meme.
Any other princesses from Fox that we don't know about?
Oh, there's loads. I've tried to stick with the animated ones.
Well, no, because if Princess Leia is also a Disney princess.
Because
if you think about it, Princess Leia is from royalty, or rather she was adopted by royalty, and they actually refer to her as Princess Leia.
Yeah, I can say that, but and that's not with the Fox acquisition, though, is it?
Well, it's not with the Fox acquisition, but the precedent has already been set among the Disney princesses, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'm fine with her being a Disney princess.
Well, she's owned by Disney. You know, Princess Leia is owned by Disney.
A lot of things are owned by Disney now. It's just like World Conquest.
Well, no, because apparently the Disney-Fox merger is to combat the invasion of Netflix and Amazon. Like,
yeah, no, it's not that. It's Rupert Murdoch has got sick of running a company. I mean, he's in his 90s. You know, there's only so many virgins you can slaughter to get by in life, and I think he's ran out. And he wanted to build like an empire for his sons to fight over. And this has actually come from like Andrew Neil, who does the Daily Politics show. And he's like a close friend of Rupert Murdoch.
And are you saying Murdoch is like an old style lord where he basically puts an octagon down and says to his sons, fight each other, the last one standing gets my empire?
Exactly. And this is because, let's say, Andrew Neil's on the BBC because Murdoch's like a close friend of him. He says, like, he was having a meal with him in some posh London restaurant, and Murdoch turned around and says, I want to leave something for my sons, and I'll leave this empire, and they can fight over it, and whoever wins can take over. And so he's got his whole, like, view of this, like, Murdoch dynasty going on forever.
Yeah.
But times have moved on, and he hasn't. And so Fox is, like you see, Netflix has came in, Amazon Prime, streaming services, the face of multimedia has changed. And Murdoch's looked at it and went, you know what, I cannot hack this. So he's put his feelers out, sent it to Disney. Disney's like, I can have them, we'll buy you. We'll buy you a big 50-odd billion dollar share and whatnot, and you can retire in Australia.
Yeah.
And go and sleep in number 10 wherever you pay for.
Didn't know that. Anyway, leaving Disney Fox to one side.
I've just got quite one thing out with Disney buying something, and this links us into the next one. They now own the rights to Dragon Ball Evolution.
Yeah, I don't think even Disney. See, Dragon Ball Evolution is a poison chalice, and I don't think even Disney will dare go anywhere near Dragon Ball Evolution.
No, I can't imagine. No, that really much.
You've said it now; it's public domain.
What I think Disney will do instead, by having Dragon Ball, they'll have the rights to the live action version of Dragon Ball. Mm-hmm. So they might just do a complete rewrite and reboot of it at some point in the future.
Yeah.
But that now leads us on to the trailer for Battle Angel. Ooh. Alita. Oh, Alita, no, Battle no, Angel.
Quick. If they've got Dragon Ball Evolution, then Princess Snake from Dragon Ball is a Disney princess.
Yeah. But, yeah, Alita, okay. Battle Angel, or Battle Angel Alita, as I call her, because that's the name.
Yeah.
Why would you change the name around just because it's moving to the West? Why couldn't you just call it Battle Angel Alita? That's my
because
first.
Because America.
My that's second problem quite... with it is, well, Mark, you take over.
The eyes.
The eyes have it.
Dear God, them eyes. Now, I don't know as much about the series as I'm assuming used to do. I've only just read the first volume last week.
I know Battle Angel Alita like the back of my hand.
So yeah, it's one of those series that's beloved by a lot of people who got into anime about 30 years ago. And I don't know, as soon as I saw that trailer and I saw everybody reacting to it, I was just like, yeah, this is not going to end well whatsoever.
Well, the main thing with Battle Angel Alita, there was a two-part OVA that was released during the, I think, the early 90s. And it was one of the few anime that was released in the UK. And this is the thing that kind of got everybody with it. It was sci-fi, not cyberpunk sci-fi. Well, there were elements of cyberpunk in there, but it was sci-fi, kind of dyed-in-the-wool, proper sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
And it was unlike any other sci-fi. It was unlike Akira and anything like that. And you had these characters that were actually quite interesting. And then people started reading the manga and found that the manga was even better than this OVA. And what we've been waiting for years now in anime, all the fans of Alita have been waiting for this for years, is a complete adaptation of Battle Angel Alita.
Mm-hmm.
But we've never been given one. Instead, what we've got is this live-action version, which maybe it will work out better. See, this is the thing that I'm holding out hope for. This is one of the rare occasions where you've only had, like, a two-part OVA to work from.
Yeah.
And that barely scratched the surface of the story. But instead, what you have is a lot of manga content, but no actual full dyed-in-the-wool anime adaptation in the way that you had with Dragon Ball and Akira and Ghost in the Shell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So that might then open the door for them to do a more thorough and accurate adaptation. Yes, okay, we have the eyes to deal with, but aside from that, the aesthetic looked quite interesting, and I didn't mind most of it.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, apart from the eyes, everything else looked pretty spot on, I thought.
Yeah.
I don't mind the eyes. I'll be controversial, I don't mind the eyes. I think it's really good, and because obviously, like, anime and manga has the big eyes thing, and the whole of Japan has the big eyes thing. The thing that'll make or break it for me is how they do motorball.
Yeah.
I'd love to see how they can make that a visual.
Well, actually, I think they'll do all right with motorball. The reason why I'm saying that is because, don't forget, I think it was the early 1980s that had that really brutal movie called Rollerball, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something, if they can bring that updated, but with, like, a motorball spin rather than, like, a Mad Max kind of feel.
Well, that's what I'm saying, you know, because they remade Rollerball with Dean Cain in it, I think, and it was just rubbish. But, yeah, if they can capture the essence of motorball and have it done like that, then I think they'll be all right. It might work out better than Ghost in the Shell. Maybe Alita will be the one to save us all again.
Yeah, well, so it's time will tell. I mean, all we've had is, like, a little trailer. It's one of them things how everything's overanalyzed in trailers now.
Well,
it's like, as soon as a trailer hits, you've got 500 YouTube people sitting there like, these are all the Easter eggs you missed.
And the thing is, those
and
people,
like, 15 minutes explaining a 2-minute trailer.
Yeah, those people can waste their time talking about all the Easter eggs in the trailer. The thing that I've noticed is, yeah, you can talk about Easter eggs in a Battle Angel Alita trailer, but I bet you don't know what they're Easter eggs of. Do you see what I mean? Because you're talking about Battle Angel Alita. You're not talking about a well-known title outside of anime and manga circles.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I am looking forward to it. I just really, really, really wish they hadn't done the eyes. She's basically a robot. You know, she's basically an android. And the whole point of her being an android was that she was supposed to resemble humans. If you read any of the Battle Angel Alita, or Gun, as the proper title is, if you read any of the manga, especially the, because there's a new set of manga that actually deals with what happened to Alita when she was growing up on Mars. When she was in training. Yeah, the Mars Chronicle. That actually highlights just how much these androids were designed to be like humans.
That makes it even worse with the thing when they're trying to, they're specifically going out the way to kind of go, yes, this girl is different to all of the others. She has big googly eyes.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I am worried about, because I know that Hollywood has a tendency to tone things down, Battle Angel Alita really should be an R-rated movie.
Yeah, from what I've read from that, it's like even the first volume's got its own...
Well, there's the organ harvesting for a start, right? That's a very big business in the place where she lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is a massive business. People are being killed and their organs are being harvested. That is one of the main underground businesses. And the guy that, I mean, this is a spoiler for anybody who's never read or watched Battle Angel Alita, okay? But the story is very old now, and if you're interested in watching it, well, you know, I'm going to spoil a little bit for you, so stop listening now. Or just, you know, play some white noise or whatever. The guy who she falls for is actually a criminal who has basically been knocking people out and harvesting their organs in order to try and buy his way to the city that floats above, because he's been tricked by one of the underworld bosses into believing that if he saves up enough money, that's going to happen.
Because it's been out since the 90s, so...
Yeah.
No need for a spoiler alert on it. It's like, people are like, oh, you spoiled Lord of the Rings. It's like, it's been a book since the 70s, man.
But you understand what you understand what I mean, you know? How are they going to play that? How are they going to spin that?
There's a lot of scope that they could actually, like, improve it in places.
There is.
But it's down to how the director says it. If the director's got, like, if they want to stay faithful to the original storyline and the original concept, rather than just go Dragon Ball Evolution it?
Well, my advice to the director is, and I'm assuming the director is male, but my advice to the director, if they are male, is have some balls, man.
It's James Cameron, isn't it?
That's it. James Cameron's got his name on it, hasn't he?
God, there's going to be blue people, aren't there?
There you go, an Easter egg. There's a Smurf in the background.
Anyway, this is, as we said, our last episode of the year, and also the Christmassiest episode that we've ever done.
You will not be disappointed.
Oh, Tucky.
Oh, no.
Got the crackers out. Hey! I'm in full dad mode.
Oh.
We're getting himself ready with the bad jokes.
He's been pulling crackers all day, and he's got a pile of them now.
It's a bit disgusting.
He's harvesting the organs.
So how many Christmas cracker party hats are you wearing right now, Tucky?
About four on my head. I'm not telling you where I'm wearing the rest.
Oh, God, it's going to be like, can you imagine Tucky's Christmas striptease? Da, 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 da.
Oh, see, I'm not sending the family the card.
The thing is, a lot of our audience is from Japan. We're going to have to explain the Christmas hat and Christmas crackers to them, because that's not any of the anime.
No. That can be one of the joys of discovery, okay? It's the joy of discovering another culture. Anyway, who wants to kick us off with their Christmas thing that they found? Now, what we were focusing on wasn't so much the things that everybody knows, because we all know Tokyo Godfathers and stuff like that, don't we?
Yeah, that's one of the ones I was going to talk about.
Oh, we're supposed to be doing obscures.
We can do obscures as well, if you want. If you want to focus on things that everyone knows, go for it.
It's just I've been watching all of the American cartoons, Christmas specials.
Oh.
I say American cartoons, I mean Family Guy, Bob's Burgers and The Simpsons.
Ah, well, let's start off with Tokyo Godfathers, since we did mention it.
That's strong.
Yes.
Yeah, Tokyo Godfathers is an absolute fantastic piece of work, and everyone should enjoy it.
I still think it's probably Khan's best film.
Yeah, I would probably agree.
In terms of the story, I think it's the best film. In terms of editing, in terms of sheer imagination, I think Paprika is the best film. But in terms of the story, I think Tokyo Godfathers is the best film, and I think the best combination of the two is Millennium Actress.
I haven't seen Millennium Actress, unfortunately.
Oh, you should watch it. It's very good.
It'll be the next one. If there's a DVD release of it, I will hunt it down because I've watched all three of the Satoshi Kon's three main ones, so I need to find the others now.
All of them are available in the UK on DVD.
Oh, that's good. But yeah, Tokyo Godfathers, do we need to go into the plot of it?
I don't think so. I mean, it's been around for years, and if you haven't seen it now, Satoshi Kon is one of those directors who I reckon if you're an anime fan, if you're a true anime fan, and sorry to all you anime fans who haven't done this, but if you're a true anime fan, you'd go out of your way to actually watch something by him.
Yeah, I think he stuffs you, but you've got to watch at least one of them.
I'm not saying that you can't call yourself a true anime fan without watching any of his work, but I think that you would be questioned about your credentials.
Have the weeb card taken off them.
Yeah, they'd have the weeb card taken off them. They can get it back after they've proven that they've watched something by Satoshi Kon. Let's leave that to one side. Let's move on. So, you've been watching loads of American ones.
Oh, where do I start? You remember there was a time, I say this, it sounds old, but so I say about 5 or 6 years ago, where you used to have a decent Christmas special.
Well, The Simpsons used to do some decent ones way back when, didn't they? Like Simpsons roasting on an open fire. I mean, talking about old Simpsons, not new Simpsons.
Yeah, they're like the one where Bart melts the Christmas tree and the whole town thinks like they've been robbed on Christmas.
Yeah.
They find like Bart's red truck and Maggie's sweater and Homer's sausage on the lawn. But this one, so I'll start off with The Simpsons anyway, since it's there. And it's kind of like we're at the point now with The Simpsons where I think it's like season 29. And obviously, like, next year's going to be another landmark. Like, they had the landmark 25th, they've had the landmark 20th. And now you're just counting every 5 years, and soon it'll be, like, every other year. But it feels like it's dead. And you know that Simpsons meme where it's like, stop, he's already dead.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
I honestly think...
The Simpsons special, they bring back Kelsey Grammer as Sideshow Bob.
Oh, God.
For the 13th time. And so that's... You know, you only watch The Simpsons now for the guest animations couch gag.
Yeah, but I reckon now that Disney are buying Fox, I reckon that's the end of The Simpsons.
Oh, please God. It's not like, you know, Matt Groening and that haven't had a good innings. You know, 30 years, that's more than anyone. They're like the Bruce Forsyth of animation.
Oh my God, though. What if they replaced The Simpsons with a more mature version of House of Mouse?
See, I'm kind of in the boat that they need to make Simpsons either good or get rid of it, and I want to say the same about Family Guy because that's been dire for about 10, 15 years now as well.
Yeah, Family Guy.
Oh, I've got a lot here.
Before you jump in with Family Guy, I want to jump in with one that I thought was has been overlooked by literally everybody, and it is called The Spirit of Christmas. Have you guys ever heard of this?
Is this a Charles Dickens ripoff kind of Spirit of Christmas?
Nope. This is Matt Stone and Trey Parker of South Park. Spirit of Christmas is actually two different animated short films that they created. The first one they just did basically basically because they could. And it was basically Jesus versus Frosty the Snowman. And then, they did another one, and this is what gave birth to South Park, called Jesus versus Santa.
Yeah.
And it's bloody amazing.
That's the one that ended up on all of the Tiger Woods discs as well, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Jesus versus Santa is just amazing. And I just want to bring that up because South Park has become this monstrous thing, you know, this huge IP now. But it started off with those two shorts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to be honest, a lot of the South Park Christmas ones are quite funny. I mean, Christmas Poo.
That's the one that, if you mention South Park and Christmas, that's the one that everyone remembers is Mr. Hankey the Christmas Pooh.
Well, there's also that one where the woodland critters, where they're all there worshipping Satan.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one. Wow, we're bringing in the Antichrist.
But for me, the best one of the lot is still Jesus versus Santa.
Sometimes you can't beat the original. And it is that. And I mean, like I was saying the other day, there's a... that Battle of the Gods game on Steam where they've brought Santa in and you can actually have proper full-on 3D Santa versus Jesus.
Yeah.
Which I think it's an amazing concept for it to have. and very sacrilegious, and a lot of people are offended, but yeah, you know, we're 2017, everyone's offended.
Yeah. Anyway, Mark, over to you again.
Oh, I've been also been watching Tokyo Marble Chocolate.
Why? Is my first question.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was quite cute. Basically, it's just a film. Well, a film. It's two OVAs about a guy and a girl who fall in love, and at Christmas, and then the guy accidentally buys the girl a miniature donkey, and escapades ensue.
It happens.
Yeah, but I mean, for me, Tokyo Marble Chocolate is kind of like going out and watching It's a Date My Santa, which I promised I'd never mention again, but I had to since we are doing Christmassy stuff.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, I watched it, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was just a nice little short thing to watch, and it was Christmassy, so yeah, I really enjoyed it.
There are some interesting Christmas episodes within particular anime that kind of are a one-off thing. It was one of the bonus episodes for Usagi Drop was the one where Daikichi and Rin are getting ready for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was an adorable episode.
A lot of Christmas episodes I do tend to enjoy a little bit more than, even if this overall series isn't particularly great. Even the Super Sonic Hall one, I kind of enjoyed it just because it was quite Christmassy, and I was just like, yeah, this is quite nice.
Mark?
Unfortunately, the rest of it was not.
Mark, are you a secret Christmas junkie?
Only at Christmas.
Anyway. It's like an alcoholic saying, oh, my alcoholism only comes back when I'm in a bar.
It is, isn't it?
Hey, you've got to watch all the Christmas stuff at Christmas, haven't you?
Anyway, Tucky.
Right, which one do you want first? Do you want Family Guy or Bob's Burgers?
Oh, it's got to be Bob's Burgers.
Right, so Bob's Burgers, as you know, is the... Well, it's Bob's Burgers, really. You can't explain it anymore. If you watch Archer, you know... oh, what's his name? Benjamin St. John or whatever his name is. So this year they had a musical, and I use the term musical very lightly, just like they did.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be like a 60-minute episode, but in reality, with all the adverts and whatnot, it's only like 42 minutes long.
Yeah.
And this year's Christmas special guest was Adam Driver, as he tries to escape the fate of always being known as Kylo Ren for the rest of his life. And he voices a gay character who's also a art life model. You know, the people who you draw naked.
Yeah.
So there's that, but basically Linda has a dream for a perfect Christmas. She decides to throw a huge party, which happens, it's kind of like a naff party, to be honest. It's one of them things, like, people who dream have this, like, whole grandeur and pageantry going on in their head, but when it really happens and you try to put it into practice, it turns out, like, you think, oh, it's going to be like wine and everywhere's going to be decorated and bright lights and everything. And it's just like a paper cup of eggnog and you're surrounded by a couple of mates at the end of it. So in the town, the local gear club has been closed down. And at the end of this party, Linda finds that the top of her tree, which had the kids' ornaments on, has been stolen. And it leads to like a whole 40-minute chase of trying to find the bit of this tree. And it turns out it's in an underground illegal gear rave with Adam Driver, who stole the tree. So, spoiler alert. And that's basically it. That's Bob's Burgers Christmas special.
Was in my imagination, the Christmas special is getting worse.
Oh, it's terrible. You know this whole thing, like, I think like last year or the year before that, they're trying to bring in like Krampus.
Yeah.
And American Dad did a fantastic job with bringing in Krampus. Not so much like the singing and whatnot, but the whole like bringing the legend forward, and lots of people jumped on the Krampus wagon. And Regular Show. I was watching an episode today and they had Krampus on that.
Yeah. Everyone jumped on the Krampus bandwagon.
Yeah. And so Bob's Burgers have tried to be like the whole hipster edgy thing that they do, and they've brought in the Bleakin.
Oh, God.
Which isn't based in any like folklore or legend. It's just the Bleakin, which is this kind of like half man, half raven creature that steals presents.
Yeah. Do you know?
That's Bob's Burgers Christmas special musical. piece of crap that it was.
It's all right, because that actually segues nicely into one of my choices, which again is an American one. It's based on a kid's storybook by Russell Horban that was first published in 1971. And this was actually made by the Henson Company when they were kind of really starting to come into their own and come into their prime. It was released in December 1977. It's called Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. You have a bunch of otter puppets, otter hand puppets, right? And I know it's puppetry, so it's still animation for all you people who are saying that's not animation. Yes, it is. You have a bunch of puppets in a shack playing bluegrass. It's one of the more surreal things that I've seen Henson come up with, but it's also absolutely delightful as well.
So, bluegrass otters.
Yes.
I'm failing to see the Christmas theme here.
It has an introduction by Kermit the Frog, and the story is about Emmett Otter and his mother, who's a widow who scrapes by on the small amount of money she gets from doing laundry and stuff like that.
Off at the seashells, down by the seashore.
Yeah. They form the Frogtown Hollow Jubilee Jug Band. And the music
still
feel
the same Christmas
thing. No, it's all set at Christmas time. That's why it's.
Oh, so that's the only Christmas thing it is.
Yeah.
It sounds like one of its things, like, let's make a band and save the old rec centre.
Yeah. Yeah, but the thing is, that's the plot of Love Live, isn't it? Isn't that the plot of Love Live, the first one? Let's form a band and save our school.
They've got cute girls that people would kill for.
These have cute otters.
These are hard-fucking otters.
These have cute otters. And if I had to do this on a scale of cuteness, then cute otter beats cute anime girl any day of the week.
Don't tell the Nico fans.
Sorry, but it's the truth, okay? I'm sorry, but if you walked up to any weeb anywhere in the world and you said, okay, here is your waifu, right? And here is a baby otter. Which one would they go for straight away and try and hug?
The waifu.
No. Nope. Always the baby otter.
Say, I'm going to have to put that to the test now.
I know you are.
I'm going to be wanting it to Sunnycon. He's your tote bag. He's your otter. There's your waifu over there.
So, waifu or otter? Waifu or otter? Oh, God. That's the episode title, isn't it? Waifu or otter?
Which one will give you
the damn Christmas there? It's not Christmas here about waifus or otters.
Emma Otter's Jug Band. That's one of my alternative picks for the season.
You say Muppets and I automatically think Muppets Christmas Carol.
Yeah, I know. That's what everyone would go for. But I was trying to find stuff that I'd seen, trying to remember stuff that I'd seen that didn't fit. And the weird thing is, I actually came up with another one, anime-based, very well-known, that everyone has forgotten is set at Christmas time, or set at winter time, I should say, and fits into the Christmas mold. And if you wanted an alternative Christmas anime movie, you could go for it if you want. Do you want to know what it is? The Disappearance of Haruhi Suzumiya.
I still haven't seen it.
Oh.
It's a very good film. What?
If you want to try and get the figures, you at conventions you will meet the one hardcore Haruhi fan, and if you have no like knowledge of it, it will be one of the most awkward experiences of your life.
Yeah, I know that person because I remember they had this proper spat the dummy out a few months ago.
Yeah, it's like a proper the disappearance of common social etiquette.
No, do you want to know how to upset them, right? Do you know how to upset the hardcore Haruhi fans who think they know it all? Because I put this theory forward a long time ago when it was right after the movie came out and I watched it, right? I put the theory forward that Yuki didn't do it. The idea that I put forward was that all of this, the entire movie, was all of the story, and this, again, will contain minor spoilers. I'll try and avoid all the major details as much as possible. But all of the events in the movie was kind of Haruhi's gift to Yuki. Because Yuki doesn't have human emotions, and Yuki has started feeling things for the first time because of, Kyon. And so Haruhi, being God, effectively, she has subconsciously decided to change reality and allow Yuki to have, for a moment, more power than her, so Yuki can basically enact this grand plan, right? But at no point does Haruhi ever lose control? Because if she did, she would be trapped in a reality where Yuki has more power than her and would cut off any resolution point. There would be no way to go back to the way things were supposed to be. So Haruhi is always in charge. It's just you don't get to see it. And it really annoys the Haruhi fans because they like to think that it's all Yuki's fault. They're like, no, because Haruhi's God. How can she have more power than God?
Oh, God.
Exactly. Or Haruhi.
That will cause one of the biggest, like, argument. Well, that probably has caused, like, a lot of arguments. It's like the weeb version of Who Shot First and Greedo.
Well, if you want to know more about that, that particular standpoint that I put forward, it's on my Mal profile in the blog somewhere. I don't remember where, but I'll see if I can dig it out and maybe I'll just share it on Twitter or something.
We can do a Christmas special about it.
So anyway,
and have everyone arguing.
Yep. And, Mark, your turn again.
I don't really have much left. I do remember there was a Lucky Star Christmas episode.
Oh, yeah.
And that was stupidly fun, as is Lucky Star.
Yeah.
That's all I remember. I can't even remember anything specific. I've watched two anime Christmas things, and now I'm just drawn blanks because I can't remember anything else.
I'm actually surprised at you, Mark. I'm actually shocked, I tell you.
Love Hina had a one as well.
Yeah. No. That's not why I'm shocked. I'm shocked. I'm shocked and confused and slightly disappointed, given that you have been in Gundam Hell and you've been wallowing there happily for like 6 months.
Yeah, but Gundam's the gift that keeps on giving all year round. It's not just for Christmas.
No, but this one is just for Christmas.
Is there a Gundam Christmas special?
Technically, yes. Endless Waltz, the movie.
I haven't seen it. It's Gundam Wing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's set on December the 24th.
Ah, oh, man. Does it have Christmas colour schemes for all the Gundam?
No, but I think it has that Wing Zero thing where it actually looks like proper wings, and you're like, how the hell did they do that with metal?
Master Dwarf Craftsman.
Yeah. So, yeah, Endless Waltz is one that I thought you were going to say, but didn't.
Unfortunately, I haven't seen it. I will hang my Gundam card up in shame.
Have we just consigned him to Gundam Hell for New Year's, Tucky?
That's not such thing as Gundam Hell. It's all fun and games.
It's all fun and games until some people die and get hurt.
That's life, isn't it?
Tucky, do you want to go again before I bring up this odd one?
All right, well, I'll just finish off with my last one. So, the Family Guy. It's another one of them. You know where you've seen every animated special and somewhere down the line they just run out of ideas, so they refer to the Charles Dickens Christmas Carol theme.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Family Guy is now at that point of laziness, and they have just basically rehashed Christmas Carol. This one is where Peter loses his Christmas spirit. It doesn't really lose his Christmas spirit, right? Because Brian turns around to the family and goes, right, the present I've got used is to work down at the soup kitchen for Christmas to feed the homeless.
Yeah.
It's obviously a cop-out because, you know, he's a douche. But Lois is like, oh, well, that's great. And it's good to give back to the community, you know, the typical like American message of like, oh, help your fellow man out. But then, you know, all the white people vote for Trump.
Yeah.
And so Peter comes in, he's like, I'm not going to the kitchen and that. And so she's like, you know, they don't even go to the soup kitchen anyway to help out.
Yeah.
She storms up and goes, my parents, Pewter and Babs, Pewter Schmidt and that, you know, the rich ones, they've always invited us over to their mansion in Newport, and I always turn them down every year. Well, this year I'm taking the kids. And so they go off to the big-ass mansion and have Christmas with the multimillionaire grandparents. And Peter's left alone. And so Peter has this whole dream thing of Christmas past, present, and future, but the ghost is Patrick Swayze.
Okay.
And Patrick Swayze is voiced by Patrick Swayze's brother Don Swayze.
Okay.
So it sounds a lot like Patrick, but it's Don. So it's a very thin plot. It's you know, as Family Guy is, it's like a lot of cutaway gags. And the only decent gags you get out of it are, you get the typical Roadhouse, which is like Roadhouse, House, Ghost Roadhouse.
I remember that.
Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, I remember and, that sketch from Family Guy where he was turning corners and every corner he kept saying Roadhouse.
Yep. So they touched on that, which was nice. And they've got the over-enthusiastic carolers. And they also have a little fun joke. Like, you know how Hodor becomes Hodor?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I remember, because they go to Christmas Pass, he's like, I remember being a kid and there's my friend Holden. And it's like, he was never the same. And then the show, like, the guy Holden, he becomes that way because in the future he's running to the toilet and he can't make it in time. Some lass saying, hold it in. And he does that whole future thing and that's how he becomes Holden.
All right.
And he turns to Patrick and he's like, oh, you died before Game of Thrones, but our fans are like that. And I kind of did, to be honest, I did. But it's boring after. It's few and far between. There's a few hit and miss.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at what he did with American Dad, with their Christmas specials.
Yeah, the American Dad Christmas special, the one where they're at war with the elves, was hilarious.
Oh, yeah, that is brilliant, that one.
They had two Christmas specials where they faced off with Santa.
Yeah.
And there was the one where his dad became the Krampus. And then they had the Apocalypse Christmas special, where Jesus came back, the rapture happened and whatnot. And it was every American Dad Christmas special, and it's all like finely linked in some way to like previous bits of the episode, like where they're trying to fuel Roger's like spaceship after Armageddon. And he's like, unless you poop out gold encrusted diamonds. Yeah. He's like, well, we found it, and it's the poop from like quite a few episodes now. And it's quite like a fun thing that you see like lots of little narrative like flung in there. And it's like, oh, I remember that. And like I say, American Dad Christmas special is fantastic. But because of programming now, I doubt we'll see another American Dad Christmas special. Unless, like, he does, like, the proper thing and cancels Family Guy.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating because they can do Christmas specials. Seth MacFarlane can. I mean, even the Cleveland Show with his Murray Christmas. Murray Christmas, or however he pronounces it. That was kind of fun as well. And it's just, like, Family Guy just seems, like, really phoned in.
Yeah. Now,
it's like he's... You can tell he's working on the Orville. He's working on other projects. He's just left like his B team in charge of like writing Family Guy and hoping that no one realizes. But we all notice.
Yeah.
Well, and like the jokes that take like a minute. That's like a minute of somebody doing something repeatedly, and there's nothing but silence. It saves money in the long run, and it passes time.
Yeah.
And we're stupid enough to sit there and watch it over and over again. But that was my American cartoony Christmas thing. It happened. There's nothing really stand out or entertaining. Even the guest stars, you know, there's nothing that entertaining or like show stopping to make it memorable. It's just another 2017 Christmas happened. We'll move on.
Yeah. I'm moving from America over to Japan now because I've pretty much left all the American Christmas specials. The only one that I would say is of any note and has been undeservedly forgotten. Right, the only one out of all the American Christmas specials or Christmas animated movies that I think has an enduring appeal and has an enduring message is Charlie Brown's Christmas special.
It's became a self-involved joke over time. Everybody always refers to it as something as like, oh, it's not a Charlie Brown Christmas special.
Yeah, it has, but that's basically people being undeservedly cynical. But if you've never watched it before and you watch it, there are themes and messages in Charlie Brown's Christmas that actually still hold true. And they're actually presented a lot better in Charlie Brown than they are in just about any other American Christmas special. And who the hell cares about Frosty the Snowman?
I used to like the Futurama Ray Christmas specials. They were always quite fun.
Yeah, the Futurama ones were quite fun. But there's an entire anime series set during winter, which hardly anyone remembers now, even though it's only been 11 years since the revamped version came out, I should say. Don't watch the original from 2002. You'll regret it. Canon.
I don't know. I've heard of it, but I don't know it.
It's one of those key visual novel adaptations by Kyoto Animation.
Oh, yeah. I know which one you're
meaning. And it is technically a harem romantic comedy drama type series, but it's all set during wintertime. Another odd duck in the Christmas movies, and you're going to love this. You're going to love the logic. Because Christmas is a time during winter, and winter has snow. See the logic here? See the logic being stretched until it almost breaks? And because this movie just happens to have snow in it as well, you know, technically it could count as a Christmas movie, even though there's nothing Christmassy about it. The only thing red in it is lots of blood. Sword of the Stranger.
I've got that. I haven't watched it, but I've got it on the... I got it the other day.
There you go. Alternative Christmas movie.
It's on my pile to watch.
Alternative Christmas movie for you.
If we're going to stretch things out that far, we can see... You can watch the One Piece movie about Chopper.
You could. Because Chopper is a deer.
Actually has a big Christmassy theme to it.
Well, Chopper is a deer.
He's a reindeer. He hasn't got a red nose. He's got a blue nose. And there's that scene at the end where it looks like Luffy Santa.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Christmas.
I mean, there was that anime series Winter Sonata, which obviously, you know, has the word winter in the title. So it was all right, but it was kind of a drag, I found as well. You know, one of the ones that I always remember, though, and I always remember it because of just the sheer dedication to the cause, was Ichigo Marshmallow, or Strawberry Marshmallow. They did a Christmas episode called Present, and it was just the sheer dedication towards Santa and reindeer presented by the episode. You're like, okay, somebody, some genius thought up this episode, and Ichigo Mashimaru, a lot of people don't know about, but if you like slice of life and you like kind of kooky but charming slice of life, then give it a watch because it is.
So you'd be surprised how many people know it.
Not many people that I know, or that I've met, have known about it.
It was one of the ones that was put on. You know, when you look stuff up and it's like the top 10 anime Christmas things to watch. It was one of the ones on there. So
yeah, but that's
on the top 10 lists.
There are plenty of anime Christmassy ones, but I suppose...
Well, if you look at the obscure, because it's got snow in, Spice and Wolf.
Yeah.
I was thinking Giovanni's Island, but that was not Christmassy, and that was not happy whatsoever.
Yeah, I know.
You want to be depressed over Christmas, you can watch that.
Oh, you want to be depressed for Clannad?
Clannad is, horribly depressing. Thing is, most of the ones that we know of had... Toradora has had Christmas episode. Wolf Children's got snow in, only in like one scene.
It's like changing of seasons and whatnot. It's a really fun movie.
Yeah.
Ping Pong the Animation had a Christmas episode where they all get drunk and talk about being alone at Christmas.
Well, K-On! Has their Christmas episode. Oh, actually, there is one. Some of the older shows had Christmas episodes. In fact, a lot of the older shows had Christmas episodes, but Chrono Crusade. Do you guys remember that?
No, but I know it's out soon, so hopefully I'll be able to look at it next year.
Who's bringing it out, like?
Anime Limited.
I actually have a big soft spot for Chrono Crusade because it's not so much the ending. I think the entire package, the entire relationship between Chrono and Rosette Christopher, I think that really works, especially in the manga. But the anime version, they did a really good job, especially when it came to the end of the series. But they did do a Christmas episode, which was a step away from all the fighting demons and stuff like that, and it was kind of a cute, charming little episode where you had Rosette dressed as kind of a Santa girl type thing, and Chrono dressed as some weird reindeer type thing. Or rather, it's just him wearing small horns. But there's loads of these old things. I mean, didn't Tenshi do a Christmas episode?
Tenshi 2 once.
I know Azumanga Daioh had a Christmas episode. School Rumble had a Christmas episode. They've all had Christmas episodes.
Yeah, I think Kobayashi's Dragon Maid had a winter episode as well, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I know people always talk about the Love Hina Christmas special, but I'll be honest, I'm not a fan.
For me, that's more nostalgia, since it was one of my first series.
But, there are plenty of Christmas episodes in anime, and, you know, we've probably not mentioned all of them. In fact, I know for a fact we haven't, because didn't Sailor Moon have, like, a Christmassy episode?
Yeah,
probably.
Oh,
a Dragon Ball Z filler at some point, where Goku learns about Christmas.
I did mention an odd duck that I discovered years ago, wasn't I? Have you guys ever heard of a series called DG Carrot?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
they actually did a little spin-off, a little OVA spin-off called Winter Garden.
Oh.
Yeah. And I discovered that years ago, and it totally slipped my mind, and I've literally had it up in front of me, because I was going through the list on my anime list of things that I've watched, and Winter Garden was on there. I was like, when did I watch this? And then I read it. I was like, oh, I remember it now. Because I watched that before. Thing is, I didn't know what DigiCarrot was before I watched Winter Garden. And so I watched Winter Garden first and then discovered DigiCarrot after I watched Winter Garden.
I want to rewatch that. That was one of the ones where I first got into anime. It was going the rounds at that point.
Yeah.
I've got a list here from Madman Entertainment, the 12 anime specials of Christmas.
Got
you
it.
Ready?
Yep.
Number 12, Punchline.
Okay.
Number 11, Nichijou, episode 22.
Ooh, that's a good one, actually.
Number 10, Azumanga Daioh, episode 17. Number 9, Hetalia, episode 31.
Not a big Hetalia fan.
That's when Finland was Santa.
Yeah.
Number 8, Lucky Star, episode 11.
Yep.
7, Kion, episode 7.
Yep.
Number 6, Persona 4, The Golden Animation, episode 8.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Number 5, Cardcaptor Sakura, episode 35.
Much forgotten one.
Euro Yuri, episode 7.
Okay.
A lot of episode 7s of the Christmas specials I'm not to know.
Yeah.
I ruined it. So, number 3, Sword Art Online, episode 3.
Okay, yeah, that again. I forgot about that one.
Oh, that's the one with Sachin, isn't it?
Hmm.
Number 2, Pet Girl of Sakura Zoo, episode 14.
That's a rubbish episode.
And finally, number 1, The Disappearance of Haruhi. That's all their Christmas specials. A few that I've completely forgot about the Sword Art Online one, even though it's a really good Christmas one.
Yeah, it's a really kind of tragic one, that one, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There's loads of Christmas specials or Christmas episodes in anime. It's weird, though, when you think about it, because it does kind of prove what I was saying. The Japanese do have a fascination with Christmas, but they don't celebrate it the way we do. It's more of a couples thing for them, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's more of a KFC and ceramic collectible plates and strawberry cheesecake. I love how it's like, somehow, over here it's like a proper like Christmas dinner with turkey and trimmings. Over there they've just took the best part, the turkey, added like the KFC 11 herbs and spices to it. I went, you know what, we'll just stick with that. We're fine. There's no need for vegetables. We'll have some gravy perhaps, and you know, we're fine. We're sorted.
Yeah, but they eat lots of oranges at Christmas, so they need something to burn through all the vitamin C that they're getting.
Yeah. Oh. It'll never be said that the Japanese never suffer scurvy.
Yes, this is true. Anyway, that's about us done for this year, in fact, isn't it?
Well, we might have one or two more sneaky things to sneak out at some point.
Yes, we will sneakily sneak things sneaky.
Sneaking something out of our sacks into your living room.
No. We won't sneakily sneak things out of our sneaky sacks and sneak them into your sneaky living room.
Operation Sneaky Sneak is not going ahead.
I was going to say, that's the Mr. Deeds one, is it? Certainly yeah. Underestimate my sneakiness.
Anyway, Keyframe is part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, and all of our shows are available on Audioboom and Apple Podcasts. We have a Patreon, and if you're a regular listener, then please show your support. Make a donation. Keep us running. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And we even have our own Twitter. What's our Twitter, Mark?
It's at Keyframe Podcast.
Or you can email us direct on studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. And that's about it from us for this episode. And indeed, this year, we're going to watch what we want for a while. It's been an interesting 2017. We'll see you all again early in 2018. Until then, I have been Rob.
I've been Mark.
I've been Tucky.
We'll see you all later. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Ho, ho, ho. Just trying to insert bell jingling.
Why don't you just go ding-a-ling-a-ling?
Yeah, the most unenthusiastic bells at the end of an episode. Ding-a-ling, Merry Christmas.